This is another edition of The Shrunken Planet. I'm your host, Jeffrey Davison, and I am in the studio with Sharon Van Etten and Heather Woods Broderick, her bandmate. They're about to go out on tour in about a month, and they're kind enough to come down here and play some songs for us, which we are delighted to listen to and to record. So there's a fair amount of stuff about you, Sharon, on the internet now. The blogs have been sort of increasing by the day, especially since the last album. So there's a fair amount of stuff that people know about you, but we'll just give them a little bit of background. You started with your family. You were encouraged musically. You sang in a choir. This is all correct so far, right?
Yes, yes. Your sources are correct, sir.
So obviously your parents were very supportive of you, and the choir, what age are we talking about here, actually?
I started in sixth grade, but in high school I took it more seriously.
So in sixth grade, we're just talking about vocals, we're not talking about instruments, or did you learn those at the same time or later on?
I took very basic lessons early on for violin and clarinet and piano, but I only learned them well enough to kind of know what I was doing. But then by the time I went to choir in sixth grade, I wasn't playing while singing or anything like that. And not until high school.
When I think of kids picking up an instrument in school, I always think, you know, of a guitar, but that, curiously, wasn't... It's not everybody's first instrument, I know, but now you're associated with the guitar. And when you found that, did all the other instruments just go by the wayside, or you just...
I haven't gotten to play those very much since, really. Mm-hmm. I've been obsessed with the guitar because it's easier to play and sing at the same time, but I just started playing piano again, which is really fun because it's more percussive, so it's kind of like strumming to keep that beat going.
Well, we'll definitely look forward to that in the future. So you're from Jersey, and then there was a brief time, 6 years or something, in Tennessee, and then back to New Jersey for a while, and now you're in Brooklyn. And I'm hoping that you're going to be here for a while. It seems like New York is working out. You're making a lot of friends musically and otherwise, and it seems to be a good thing for your career overall. So Is it going to be Brooklyn for the long haul?
It's the first time I felt at home in a while, so I'm going to try to stay as long as I can.
So that's good. Now, so when you were working on all these songs, now the first stuff that I knew about was in 2007, and you were still working small clubs and whatnot, but you did put out a single on Abbotton Book Company. Now you were still pretty unknown at that time, so how did they hear about you, or how did that happen?
My friend Allison was an assistant to Mark Dagley, who is a painter in Jersey City. Mm-hmm. And she would play my home recordings while she was working at a studio here. And she just told him about my music, and he had house shows in the summertime they had garden parties, mm-hmm. where they would have an art opening simultaneously with a musician playing. And he asked me to play a couple times, and then he offered to do a limited edition lathe cut.
Yeah, very limited.
50 copies or something.
Yeah, something like that. But I think all the releases from that label are pretty small.
They like to be obscure, I think.
Yeah. And then... So at the time you had that recording of your home recorded songs out, or
they were all just self burned CDs and hand painted covers, five or six songs at a time that I was working on, but nothing ever concrete.
Yeah, there was a couple of CDs that I came across around that time. One was recorded at the Bowery Poetry Club. So, and there's another one, I don't remember exactly what's on it, but, so those are the kind of things that you would sort of hand out and sell at your shows and whatnot?
Yeah, I would have a different copy at every show, just to make it special.
So, at that time, how many, like, by the time you put out your your first album, which was also self-issued, how many songs were floating around, or how many songs were you working on? Was it 10 or 100? Or
I have no idea. It's probably over 30 that I have probably forgotten. I have no idea.
And some of those did end up on Because I Was in Love, the first album, which was put out on Language of Stone. So some of those, I understand that some of those you chose, and some of those, was it Greg Weeks? And how did you, that just seemed like an organic thing, or you flipped a coin, or?
Yeah, I gave him a bunch of my home recordings that I had been working on still, thinking that they were the strongest songs, and we picked the ones that made the most sense together, although really they were all kind of slow and sad and lethargic, so they could have all made sense together, but we both picked six of our favorites, basically, and put them together.
Slow and Sad, some of my favorite songs. So because he's affiliated with that sort of Philadelphia psych folk scene, there is somewhat of a vibe of that UK folk from yesteryear on that, but I don't imagine that that's what you were looking for, but there's some of that flavor that kind of filters through. It reminds me a little bit of some of the Shirley Collins recordings, because she had her sister Dolly playing the portative organ in the background, so there's a little bit of that feel on that album as well, but that's not something you were looking at or looking towards. It was just you and your songs. I mean, had you heard any of those kind of recordings at that time, or?
Well, I think you told me about Shirley Collins and Ann Briggs, and I was listening to them for a little while, and I was also listening to Vashti Bunyan. I don't know if it's like a lot of the influence I feel are subconscious. I never make an effort to make arrangements like the artists that I listen to, but I feel like I write sometimes in a way that is definitely inspired by them without even realizing it until I hear the song later.
Yeah, even somebody as great as Bob Dylan is famous for stealing material. So he just, the general rule of thumb is just steal from the best. So, and with him, I think sometimes it's an unconscious thing, but clearly he's also taken stuff, he's lifted pieces, phrases. That doesn't seem to happen with you. It's sort of like it's more of an undercurrent in the back of the music and not a deliberate thing like that.
Except for my Every Rose Has Its Thorn cover.
So,
oops.
When you, are there other, you don't seem to do a lot of covers, or you don't seem, are we ever going to see like some traditional songs sort of creep into some of these Sharon Van Etten records, or?
Maybe. I want to work on more covers. I get really self-conscious of playing other people's songs because I'm afraid I'll insult somebody. Because usually when I want to cover a song, it's because I love it so much. I want to make sure I do it justice or have a really good take on it. But so far, the covers I've tried have been The Soft Boys, I Want to Destroy You.
One of my favorite folk songs.
Yeah, obviously Ann Briggs inspired.
Definitely. Yeah, I think Robin Hitchcock was definitely listening to Ann Briggs at the time.
Nobody knows he plays a dulcimer.
Right? So after the first album came out, I mean, there's sometimes a real sophomore jinx about the next album. Did you have any fears that the second album was going to live up to it? You had gotten a lot of good press for the first one, rather. Did you want to rush out another one, or did you just, it's sort of a short album, the second one, it's like 32, 33 minutes or something, and it does seem like a transitional album in a way.
I was really ready to record again. I had songs prepared, and I didn't want to slow down.
Yeah.
And the opportunity came up, and it didn't make sense to wait. So I just recorded. Of course, I'm always going to be nervous to come out with another record because I'm always going to want to do better. And I'm always prepared for people to be critical because I think most people are ready to hate something. You know, fans hopefully want to like it. But I feel like the more you put out there, the more people are going to look for...
Yeah, I guess there's always that element out there, but I understand that.
I just want to keep topping myself, that's all.
Well, I've heard some of the album that you're about to come out with early in February, Tramp, and I think you have done that, actually. So far, I don't think you have too much to worry about, and each of the albums has such a different feel to it. So I think that's a really great thing to pull off, because it's very easy, I think, for an artist who has some success with a certain sound to stick with that. But you've also met a bunch of musicians, and it seems like people are more than willing to throw their hat in the ring and help out and whatnot. So you've also gotten different sounds in that way. You had pedal steel on Epic, and this is Tramp is a very rocking album, so much different than the first one, certainly.
Yes, it's a bit of a progression, maybe.
It's, well, yeah, it could be, and it's just a different thing altogether. So there's still some of that. There's still this Sharon Van Etten songwriting that we all love. So. And it's just a hard rocking sound, that's all. That's all there is to it. But today, we don't have the full band. We just have Sharon and, as I said, her bandmate, Heather Woods Broderick, who is going to sing backup vocals. So what's the first thing we're going to be treated to?
The first song is called We Are Fine.
All right. Let's give it a shot. We're here with Sharon Van Etten.
Baby,
This is Sharon Van Etten, and you're listening to WFMU, and I'm going to play a song called Give Out. Confidence is speaking to me. I lose. He loves you. This is Sharon Bennett and still playing on WFMU, singing here with Heather Woods Broderick. This next song is called Kevin's. Thank you. forgot the next song, but I just remembered it. This next song is called All I Can, and I think it's our last song.
That sounded awesome. You guys really sounded great. It's a little bit of a throwback to the old Sharon Van Etten sound with new songs. Years ago, it used to be just you and the guitar, and then you'd invite someone else up on the stage or the bandstand, wherever, to play with you. So it's any chance of hearing some acoustic stuff with the band, or is this are you just gonna tour with the full band? I'm guessing.
Tour the full band, but I'll have my acoustic guitar with me, and we'll probably shake things up a little bit. Have, you know, do a lot of new songs, but we'll do some old stuff too.
I understand when you're writing songs, you just sort of, maybe you have a bit of music in your head, and then you sit down with the guitar and record stuff. Just whatever comes out. Which, when I think of someone writing a song, I think someone sitting down with a piece of paper, like a poet or something like that. But that's not how it happens for you.
No, I wish I could write that way. But I'm more of a singer than a writer, so when I hear a melody, I just try to develop it as much as I can with the guitar. And then the lyrics come much later.
Yeah, even someone like Brian Eno, for him, the music always came first, and then he would just go back in and add lyrics because the music would suggest something. But when the music is in your head, is that already suggesting an idea? Or do you sort of have the feel for the song and then you're just trying to find the words to make that? Or,
I mean, I write a lot of stream of conscious from when I'm going through a really hard time. A lot of the time when I'm writing and recording, it's not for other people. It's just for me and trying to work through my own issues.
You have issues?
No. Yes, many. But I write and record it to get an understanding of what I am going through. And I'll record for 10, 20 minutes sometimes and just listen back and try to analyze what it is I'm thinking and feeling, because I have a really hard time talking about my emotions in general.
So, well, I'm not sure if I agree with that entirely. I mean, your first album is a pretty emotion-drenched record, and they're very personal songs. So when you start to get attention from music critics and fans, did it surprise you, or did it seem like, oh, well, the songs have meaning for me, and naturally it would connect? Or did it still seem like somewhat of a surprise in some way?
Definitely a surprise, because I get nervous a lot of the time that sometimes my songs are too personal and people can't relate to it. Like, it's not universal enough if it's too autobiographical. And I feel like I'm still honing in on, like, still learning how to write in a way where it's from personal experience.
Right, I guess you always run that risk. There are a number of records that I can think of where they have a great reputation, and then you go and dig them up after looking for them for years and years, and the songs, they're not personal in a certain way. They have a sort of a generic feel, but your songs are definitely of your emotions. You know, they're definitely coming from you. They're not. That's, I think, what people are connecting with, because it's whatever it is that someone is experiencing or has experienced themselves, it's a real thing. It's not, I don't know if I can put it into words, but I think sometimes songwriters miss the mark. They don't quite get across what they want to. So I think that's why people respond to you. Now, you put your CD in the hands of Kip Malone years ago, and he responded. Now, a lot of people would have just toss that aside, or, you know, I'll get to it someday, but obviously, to his credit, he listened to it and he liked it, and then things started rolling from there. So obviously you were making connection.
I'm super lucky. I don't know what is going on, but this,
well, you were working at it. One of my favorite expressions comes from baseball, is luck is the residue of design. So there's always a, you were working at it, and then there's always an element of luck in sports is, and in music. You know, you never know who's going to come across your music. And even now, years later, like I'll find a record, I'll play it on a Saturday morning, and someone will email me and say, wow, thanks for playing my record. I didn't know anybody still gave a damn, you know? And it's just, there are records that are put out that are forgotten literally for decades. But you never know where they're going to come up again. So that's part of the luck of it. But there's a lot of hard work. And I think those of us who are fans and listeners, it all has sort of a romantic, oh, you know, she's writing songs and then she's touring the world. But there's, I saw you at Mercury Lounge recently, and I saw you guys schlepping out your gear. So there's the hard work of touring. How much would you say the tour, when you're let's say abroad, are you, how much of it is fun and how much of it is, wow, we got to get through this?
I don't know how they're already saying.
We're rushing to get something to eat, and
you don't get to enjoy the cities very much.
No, you get to see a lot of places, and then you make notes of where you'd like to go back to at a later date. Usually,
so there's almost never enough downtime. Like you're in a great city, and you don't get to the art museum, or let alone seeing another concert.
Well, we're touring. We're driving in a van, and so I think when you are having to drive every day, you get to the venue in time to work. But
because the drives are pretty, it's like a different city every day in Europe, which they're intense drives.
Sometimes not as intense as the U.S.
That's true.
This is a big country.
Yeah, you guys drive around the United States also, or you drive?
Yeah, cross country trips.
Wow. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, especially West Coast when it's 8 to 10 hour drives every day and then playing a show.
Yes, the United States is a big country.
Yes, it is.
And you guys are going to go out on tour at the beginning of March, is it? You're starting in?
Beginning of February.
Beginning of February.
Yeah, we leave the 9th.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
But you're playing two dates here in New York, the Bowery Ballroom on the 25th, which is a Friday?
Yeah, the 24th at Music Hall and the 25th and 26th at Bowery.
Oh, okay. I was a little bit off on that. One of the Bowery Ballroom dates is already sold out, I believe.
Oh, yeah, the 25th.
Right. So there are still tickets to Music Hall and the other Bowery Ballroom date. So I would suggest to listeners to buy tickets to that as soon as possible if it's not already sold out by the time this thing airs. But I've heard the album, and it's truly a phenomenal record.
The 26th is my birthday.
The 26th, oh wow.
The 31.
It's not on Wikipedia, so I had no idea. Now expect a flood of birthday cards coming in. So Heather, you're originally from Portland?
I'm originally from Maine, actually.
Originally from Maine.
I grew up for the first half of my childhood in Maine, and then my family drove across country, and I spent the next years and years in... Actually, I lived in the countryside outside of Portland, and then I spent about 10 years living in Portland once I was a little bit older.
And when did you come to New York? You're living in New York now, I'm assuming.
I came here in September of 2011, so I've just...
Really?
I'm very new.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I didn't realize you're so new to the city.
Yeah.
And so in almost no time at all, you hooked up with Sharon Van Etten and got in the band. How did that happen?
We have mutual friends, and just through music. I've been playing in several different bands over the last couple years, and mutual friends of ours kind of match made us, kind of set us up.
They're scheming. Sure, it was Aaron.
Well, sometimes those schemes don't work out. Obviously, it worked out.
It was kind of like going on a blind date and having it. actually turn into something. No.
Okay. Well, you know, like a blind date and with a band. I mean, there's four of you that normally tour in the band. I know you had five when you played up at when you opened for the National up at Upper West Side. The name of the theater I've just forgotten, just off the top of my head.
Beacon.
The Beacon, right.
Beacon.
So you're going to tour with a four-piece band. And so, obviously, you know, we're just talking about it. Chemistry is obviously a huge thing. You're living with these people. You're in hotel rooms, and you're schlepping equipment, and you have to put on a show night after night. So,
I think that's what I meant when I was referring to a date, because people say playing in a band is quite similar to being in a relationship.
I feel like it's more complicated than being in a relationship, because you're forced to be around each other much more. You're put under stress every day. You're put under extreme circumstances.
You're hungry a lot.
But, it's really complicated, because it's getting emotionally tied to someone that you're creative with. Also, so there's a lot of things going on there. I lucked out, though. We've only gotten a fist fight once, Heather.
Well, neither of you guys look the worse for wear, so I guess the scars have healed there. That's great.
We're really fortunate to have a nice group of people to tour with. Everyone is really pretty laid back.
Yeah, there are famous stories in rock history of bands that have broken apart, I guess most famously the Beatles, but those the chemistry that just held together for so long and then it didn't. But I, as a writer, Sharon, do you have an urge to do something other than writing songs, or are you so focused on that? I know some people have these secret dreams of, oh, you know, someday I'm going to paint, or I'm going to write a novel, or anything like that, of just sort of bouncing around your head? Or
I have a dream of being a therapist someday.
A music therapist?
Yeah, music.
Or a psychiatrist.
Well, I feel like in some ways it can either be for, you know, like musicians, but a therapist to musicians, or something.
A very specialized therapist.
Yes.
Well, you'd have no shortage of people to analyze. You musicians are a sort of a cracked bunch of people, you know, by definition. Well, artists are, by the nature of what they do, they tend to have, they're always engaged in a struggle.
And also, you know, I'd have an opposite, like a normal schedule for musicians, because my hours would be from like 5 p.m. until 6 a.m.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So they could call any time they wanted.
The doctor was in you, hang a shingle. So when are you planning to take these classes in social work or whatever? Is that after the tour?
Yeah, I think maybe I have a break in the summer.
So oh,
then
perfect.
I just take some summer classes.
Perfect. You just get a master's degree in a few weeks. Maybe you could do it with correspondence. Maybe you could do it while you're on the road.
Yeah,
you know?
just letters, or, you know, give them the hours. I'll be in the van, and then everyone else can pipe in. It can kind of be like group or something.
Great. So, all right. Well, you know, I think maybe I should. I'll learn an instrument so I can. Because who would be a better therapist than Sharon Van Etten?
This crazy lady. This emotional mess.
I know on Epic you make a reference to Fleetwood Mac and what an influence they had. What was it about their music? I'm guessing it's like 1980s era, 70s, 80s era.
Well, I liked a lot of their stuff, but I thought...
What did you hear in that was sort of special or striking? What really went in? Do you remember?
Well, the harmonies, and they're really not vindictive, but the really brutal lyrics. And the story of the relationship that definitely showed itself in the songs.
Mm.
And the fact that they're singing about each other, to each other, singing each other's songs that the other wrote about the other person, and And
have you heard Richard and Linda Thompson's Shoot Out the Lights, or that yeah. record, with their famous breakup record, where there's some great stories where they were touring for that album, and Linda was so angry with Richard at that time that she would just, in the middle of a concert on stage, she would just go over and kick him. And I'm sure it happened on more than one occasion. So there's your crazy musicians. Now, Richard Thompson, one of the most celebrated songwriters alive and someone whose music I love, and yet they're someone who caused a great deal of pain in somebody else's life. So it's kind of amazing. There's a lot of emotions that get roiled up, I'm sorry I never saw any of those shows. I would pay good money now to see.
I bet that would be amazing. I bet it'd be really aggressive shows.
So, on the first album, everybody knows, or anybody who's listened to the album, it's such a sad song. Like you said yourself, so many sad songs on it and whatnot. But in a way, Epic, to me, is almost a more heartbreaking record, because you seem freer to say certain things. Some of the lyrics on Epic are, to me, more heartbreaking or more biting or more personal in a way, even though, I guess, technically, the first record has a sadder mood to it. And then the album Tramp, which is just about to come out, which you've played songs from today, there's a bite to some of those songs, which really wouldn't be out of place on that Richard and Linda Thompson record, and especially the song Serpents, which is the single from the record. Now, that's a song with a lot of bite to it, and it's clearly the song that should have been and is the single from the record. It just seems natural. It seems obvious when you listen to it, although the album is good from beginning to end, in my opinion. That song is just such a standout. And to me, it shows how much more confident you are to say those kind of words, those kind of phrases. And just to get that stuff out is, to me, astonishing. So it must be gratifying for you.
It's really cathartic. I feel like the first record was me just wallowing and kind of, it's coming from a really broken place. And then then Epic was me coming out of that, trying to have a band to feel like I had support to do these, to say more and acknowledge more than one emotion, because I feel like that's something I didn't do before Epic. But I was still learning how to do it. I still softened everything a little bit, even though I was talking about it more. But I'm a lot more comfortable talking about other emotions and sadness now. But I'm still getting there.
So would you say that the songs that are on the album Tramp, is that more like what you feel is the real Sharon Van Etten, and the other songs, the earlier songs were not quite there, or it's all you, it's just different phases of you?
It's all me, it's just different phases of me. Because I feel like people that just know me outside of my songs see a confidence now that I didn't have before, too. But it's just figuring out who I am again. You know, I lost myself a long time ago, and I'm just finding it again.
Some people never find that person, so consider yourself very lucky.
Well, I'm not there yet.
Well, I don't know if you ever get there yet, but as long as you're in the game, as long
just
as you
trying.
Have your head, yeah, that's all any of us can do. So, well, it's just been such a pleasure to have you guys down here in the studio, Heather Woods Broderick and Sharon Van Etten here at long last.
It's been a long time coming. I really appreciate you having us.
Well, it's a great pleasure, and thank you for playing such wonderful songs for us today, and the best of luck on the tour.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
All right.